funny shit that took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
So the much maligned Leinster Championship took centre stage, lads. Quarterfinals, all classic games. Well, not classic games. Two went to extra time. And then we had Carlo rising, continuing by hammering a sorry loud. Pete McGrath threw all his players under the bus after. We might mention that in part three. The big game was out west. But like, I mean, let's be honest. It was all about the Leinster Championship. And isn't that great for me and you, Keane, just to sit here and smugly say it was all about the Leinster Championship?
Well, I can't believe you're talking about that. And you're not talking about the real Leinster Championship, which was the O'Byrne Cup final when Meath beat Westmeath. A scintillating performance by Meath.
I'm refusing to allow this to be even mentioned here.
So we're just ignoring the free-flowing shootout up in Ballybuffet, are we?
The Ballybuffet. See, this was just a routine win for... And this is obviously Cavan now coming to play football and not really sure what that means. Isn't that like the kind of weird confusion when you change a style to another style and now they're leaving four forwards up but the other lads not really sure what to actually do? So that looks like an absolute mess of a situation.
Yeah, well, I think the narrative has to change now for everyone to just start giving out about this terrible defence of Connacht football that's taken over. So look, a lot of decent games over the weekend, and this stage of the season allows I suppose the counties that aren't going to be in the All-Ireland shake-up to get their championship victories and to get a bit of a buzz going in their county. And, there was a lot of evenly contested games, particularly in Leinster. So, it was a good weekend for Wicklow. Very good weekend for Wicklow and a good weekend for Carlow.
Brilliant for Wicklow, yeah. And we'll have John Evans coming up on the show later on. Brilliant weekend for Laois. I was down in Wexford Park and that was just absolutely fantastic stuff. Like, I mean, I've actually never felt like that as a Laois supporter, because when Laois's good days, I would generally be kind of playing over that period of time. And then since I stopped playing, hasn't been an awful lot to shout about. There was a bit of a run in the qualifiers. I think it was 2012. Dublin beat us in Croke Park in a quarter final, but that was a decent run. But there was never a rousing comeback like that. I mean, that really got the Laois crowd going behind them. It was just fantastic stuff.
Yeah, well, I think there's nothing better than your team having to face some form of adversity in a match and, come from a large deficit behind to take a game right near the end. I think as a Meath fan, I suppose that's something that we were very lucky to experience an awful lot as supporters. So yeah, I think it is. It makes a victory even more special when you can face that adversity.
Yeah.
And come back.
I think Wexford actually did it to you 1 year, didn't they? They came back out of nowhere.
I think
Dr. Cullen Park.
We were something like 8 or 10 points up with 18 minutes to go, and somehow contrived to lose the game. And you do end up when you lose games like that. It's funny, throughout my career, I've lost games like that and I've won games like that as well. So it can. Sometimes you have you always require a little bit of luck when you're making those turnarounds. You generally get a jammy goal or two, or something that's a bit innocuous, where somebody tries to score a point and it drops short and someone flicks it in the net and that nearly starts the revival.
Yeah.
You're relying on something, you keep plugging away, but you have to get that little bit of luck. And Laois probably got it with the choice for Wexford to clip their penalty over the bar at the end of normal time.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that for a minute then, because I have this on my notes. We're going to get to the Mayo Galway
stuff. We're starting with
Laois. Listen, I'm researcher, producer and presenter of this show, and if I can't get Laois on at the top of this show after what I saw on Saturday night, I have to say I was so disappointed last night. Not disappointed for myself, because I was at the game, I experienced it, and I saw loads of Laois people there and they're jumping out of their skin. The report on RT last night in the Sunday game, I thought was a disgrace, and it wasn't even up from a height. It was like it was almost like this was a cameraman with it on his shoulder. It was at ground level, so there was no sense of how this was an amazing second half comeback. This was, crowd were going crazy. There wasn't even a picture of the crowd. There was no sense of what this was like. There was nothing, so it was no big deal to me, like I said, because I was at it. But I just don't understand how RT can get away with a camera on someone's shoulders. I don't know if it was on his shoulders, but it was at that height.
Selector
for championship
walking along the sidelines.
Because we have seen it during the league in the Monaghan Kildare game, and we were talking about it here in the podcast, and you'd say, alright, that was just a league game, that's fine. This is bloody championship. There's only 5 games all weekend in the football. Send a proper camera crew. Like, that's not good enough. How are they getting rights for this? Like, are the GAA not at St. RTE? What are you bringing us? Like, I mean, okay, you want 31 games, that's the price. So the price is one part, but what's your product? What are you giving us if we give you this? Or are they going to TV3 saying, how much are you going to give us? All right, well, it's a little bit less than RTE, but what have you got? Well, this is our product. We won't cut short. We will give you proper highlights. Yeah. We will do all that. I don't see the GEA demanding a proper product from RTE because they're in a comfort zone. And to see that effort of a leash package last night after what I witnessed on Saturday, it just didn't go, it didn't mix.
Yeah.
It just did not add up.
And you're not being out of order here, saying, like, that's a fair question for the GEA to ask, because lots of media companies will get asked that if you look to get an accreditation at Croke Park.
What,
say,
are, you
well, what are you bringing?
Yeah.
Like, you show us that you're doing this work over the year and it's good quality work that will actually help the GEA in a way. But that's not a, like, the way it was shown last night, it was just like there was someone's head there when that equalising score went over, and it was just like, what is happening here? Like, this is one of the best games of the weekend.
Yeah.
And there was nothing for
and,
it. Like,
and a blatant leash penalty that was turned down. I would love to have seen it again because this was a huge turning point in the first half. Leash were penalty disallowed, not allowed, or wasn't blown for a penalty as the ref went in and asked his umpires. It was a bizarre decision. Wexford came straight back down and scored a goal to put like 10 in it, and this was literally game over for Leash. But there was no sense that, there was just nothing. There was no narrative. Like, the game didn't that narrative didn't follow on this report.
But
it was
like,
just
now more than ever we need those highlights, because like the first 19 games of the championship, the football championship, only one game will be shown. There's no more games now of football on TV for 3 weeks, so we need these highlights more than we ever have, and it's seemingly getting worse.
Yeah, no, exactly. Right, well, listen, we want to I didn't even want to do that, lads, but I just kind of got myself carried away.
It is frustrating, and I suppose I spoke about it the last time I was on in the preview of the championship. You know, there was nothing about that New York game either,
which is
a championship opener. It's very disappointing because, like, it just again displays, and I know sometimes maybe we can be accused of being guilty of it here, but it's very difficult to cover games when you don't get the appropriate coverage. We can't be at all the games, but like it's terrible that such an incredible game of football, you know, that Wexford Leash game was, and we have just no coverage of it, no proper coverage. Let's be honest about it, and that's very, very disappointing because again, it shouldn't be all about. Do you know Galway Mayo? Like, it shouldn't be all there. That game was a brutal game of football by comparison, in terms of a complete lack of excitement, lack of joy in the game, nothing really to gather you. Limited amount of scores. Yeah, like, we can all talk about how it was great and very competitive and this, that and the other, and yeah, we know that if Galway or Mayo played Leash or Wexford, they beat them, but that's not the point. Like,
match of the day will do the order in order of which game was the best game. So like Leash, Wexford should have had pride of place last night, and Wicklow Offaly on the extended highlights. But when you're sending down one camera and it's on pitch level, how the hell can you do that? They're not investing in it, and that's it. I don't want to go on about it anymore, I'll get myself annoyed. I want to talk about Johnny Heaney's goal, lads. And it was an unbelievable goal, but he smashed it. And it's like Clark kind of thought he was going to go down to the right hand side and almost had committed that way. And sometimes I wonder, like, is placing it to that side off the outside of your boot the right thing even to do? Or Stevie McDonald's a big fan of just hit that as hard as you can. And it didn't, like, Heaney kicked it and it might come a little bit off centre right and might have fooled the goalkeeper that way. And sometimes when you're in like that, is the best thing to do, Keane. I remember one of your goals when you scored 4 against Loud was a bit like that, where it kind of came off your boot and the goalie was gone the wrong way. I think of Owen Mulligan's brilliant goal after the run against Dublin. Like, he fooled Cluxton that day because he sliced it off the side of his foot.
Well, a lot of the best goals and most important goals I've ever scored have been, you hit the target.
Yeah.
And so if you're moving at speed in a particular direction, or in my case, moving at a moderate pace, if you go to strike, say you're aiming for the far corner of the goal and you're moving kind of in the opposite direction, naturally when you strike the ball on the move like that, there's going to be a bit of an outside
spin.
Going to slice it a bit, and you can end up absolutely lifting the roof of the net out of it, sort of down the centre or even above the keeper's right shoulder, even though you're aiming for the far corner. Sometimes you can catch them perfectly and it drills low into the corner on the far side, but my thing always was hit the target. And if you strike the ball cleanly enough, the goalkeeper doesn't see it. Like, there was a goal I scored in the county final, and there's actually a picture, and the ball has hit the net before the goalkeeper has reacted,
right.
And it went straight over the goalkeeper's head, so the ball is in the net and then the goalkeeper is just trying to lift his hands to get up to it. So that to me is, I would always be wary of you know, sometimes when you get in very, very close to a goalkeeper, you have to try and place it either side, you know, kick the ball where the goalkeeper isn't.
Yeah.
But if you're taking a strike from anywhere from the 21 to 14 yard line, or maybe slightly inside the 14, just hit the target, hit the back of the ball and hit the target every time. And if the keeper, if it hits the keeper, the keeper saves it, well, well done him. But you've done like, there's nothing more regrettable than coming through on goal and hitting a sort of a weak, tame effort or a miss hit shot, or where you go to place it and you duff it, or you just make a hames of the thing. Like, I think there's, you strike with conviction and hit the target, and I think all the best goals and all the best goal scorers, that's what they do.
It's funny though, like, I mean, because I remember hearing this advice just blasted, and I was not a good goal scorer, and like, I mean, when I'd blasted and it would go a little bit to the right of the goalkeeper, he'd stand up and he'd save it. Like, he wouldn't be committing himself. Maybe our eyes being thrown here. Maybe, like,
drop the shoulder a little bit.
Maybe I wouldn't think Johnny Heaney has the composure to show eyes.
Some people are just good strikers of the ball, and it wouldn't really matter if they're generally reasonably accurate. I think some people, they get through and they're a little bit uncomfortable, or they're not, you know, some guys can only kick the ball about 30-40 metres even with a kick pass. Maybe they can get it 50 metres and they're absolutely hammering the ball.
Yeah, that's me,
no,
by
accuracy.
The way, so maybe we're getting to the bottom of it.
So really, I think if you don't have the power, you should lay it off to the shooters.
I didn't really like the laying off part either, if I was in, but like, I mean, I'd be ticking off to keep going and trying for it. But yeah, I thought Johnny Heaney, and it has to be pointed out, and this is credit to Galway management, we'll get into the tactics of this in part two, but when Dermot O'Connor got sent off, Kine was the sweeper, and they were leaving him back, and he wasn't affecting the game at all, so they left him sweeper for maybe 10-15 minutes. After about 10 minutes of the second half, they brought on Brannigan, they took off Kine, and they put Johnny Heaney back as the sweeper. So it was a lovely offensive move, and look who pops up late with a late run, Johnny Heaney. So I think that needs to be pointed out. And while that game is much maligned yesterday, a lot of that has to do with the way Mayo set up, and we'll talk about that in part two as well. But that's a smart substitution. Now, and it sounds very basic and logical to us here in the podcast, but you'd be surprised how many managers will just conservatively leave Kine back there.
Yeah, well, when things are going okay, and it's sometimes the management are lads on the sideline, they just leave things as they are. We're still in this game, things are not going too badly, we're doing okay, you know, if we keep doing what we're doing, we'd probably win the game. But I think it's always good to view the game as it's progressing. So in that second half, Mayo had dropped completely back every time Galway got possession, so Galway didn't need to have Kine back there. I mean,
no.
The fullback Sean Handy O'Kelly came up the field a couple of times, and I was just thinking, why do they keep leaving him with the ball in his hand? He came up the field twice in a row and gave it back to Mayo, and you're just thinking, that lad needs to get back into the full back line, and they need to give the ball to lads who are comfortable on it out the field. So it was a good move to take off one of their full back line, because they weren't required.
No.
They didn't need three markers, and to get on a more offensive player. And in fairness, Brannigan's mobility made a difference, and obviously Heaney coming late onto the move, being a more accomplished ball player, right man in the right position, you know, you give him a better chance than Kine. Probably wouldn't have even been in that position, you know, that's sort of the way these games
go. He definitely wouldn't. But it was a smart move mid game that they made. The Dunica, or the Dermot O'Connor sending off Conan, like, there's nothing more can be said about this other than that was a filthy, filthy challenge.
Yeah.
With Conroy's hands down to take, nearly took his head off with an elbow. That's disgraceful. It's the shot. And see, Dermot has me wondering a little bit because of his reaction to it, and he looked so innocent, and he was like, I don't care how innocent you are or how sorry you are, you could have broke his jaw and have him out of the game for 4 months, have him out of work. That's not good enough, looking innocent. That was a filthy, he nearly took his head off with an elbow. It's not good enough, and he might only get a one match ban for this, depending on what the ref puts in, but like, that's, there's a flaw there.
There's nothing else the ref can put in. Like, an elbow is a one match ban. That's the outrageous thing about it. And as much as I was hammering Jim McConnell, that, you know, if you tickle a referee, you get 12 weeks. If you break someone's jaw, put a hole in someone's face, then you get one match. And it's something really not right with that.
Like,
it wasn't, I heard people say he was protecting himself. He's on a football pitch, he's going to get tackled. Like, what do you mean protecting yourself? Otherwise you run around with your elbows up all the time.
He was after being fouled and he was frustrated, and it was Conroy. And like, I mean,
I think he saw Conroy coming in at speed towards him, but what he did was totally over the top in terms of aggression, completely over the top. And to be honest, that tackle was so dangerous, he should get a 3 month ban.
Yeah,
he really should, because there's no place for that. If you put yourself in the perspective of a tackler, as we all are in games, and you come in and you open your body up and get your hands out to try and tackle the ball, and then a guy just yeah. loafs you with an elbow. You're totally unprotected.
It's a complete cheap shot. Yeah.
Now, I would have had sympathy for Dermot O'Connor if he was after being fouled and he was coming. He sees Connery coming in a pace. If he had just stuck his arm up like a forearm just to protect himself, you know, high. He sees Connery coming in. He's the ball under his left arm. If he just puts his arm up to protect himself, and Connery ran into it, then you can say, listen, he had his arm up to protect. It's probably a yellow, but there was nothing. There was no malicious intent. He was protecting himself. But what he did was he really swung the elbow and followed through very heavily with the elbow, not just getting your arm up to protect or sticking a hand out. You know, sometimes you'd stick the palm of your hand like a hand off.
Yeah.
But you know that particularly when and that would be into the chest, like this is high into the face, very very aggressive, and I thought it was a terrible tackle, and you know really could have done serious damage to Paul Conroy. Yeah. Like I mean, he looked like he was sparked out when he was hit because he just, you know, on the slow mo replay, he looked like he was completely knocked out before he hit the ground. Now hopefully his recovery. You know, I haven't heard anything.
No,
as whether
I saw him.
He has any injuries or anything.
I saw him in the tunnel afterwards. He was talking to someone, he says, I'm okay, but his lip was way out, he was burst open. But that was it was the follow through, and it was the fact that Conroy, if that was sometimes you might put an elbow into someone's chest just to push him away maybe or whatever, but this Conroy's a big man,
but
so that elbow was way
forearm
up.
Yeah, like forearm. You even this, look at it like you're keeping your arm level, you're not driving the elbow forward like that. I mean, it's a real it was a real dirty act, to be honest.
It was a dirty act, and he deserves more than a one game ban. I think we'd all agree on that. Tom Parsons has to be mentioned. Give him a shout out. Damien Hayes sent me the picture of that last night on the way home in the car, and it just was in my mind the whole way home.
Very nasty, yeah.
Very nasty. This was a complete accident. It was Owen Cairns that dived on a ball, and he was full blooded diving for. So there was no untoward about this. It was just terrible luck for Tom Parsons, and everybody knows Tom Parsons, an absolute gent, was on the show last year, and he's a brilliant player, and it's just very very sad. He had some injury worries a few years ago, and look, I mean, this is just a horrible thing to see on a football field, and maybe it had a psychological effect on the Mayo players. Like, it happened Beano McDonald when we played 1 year, and like I didn't get it out of my head after seeing that leg flying around like jelly. Yeah. Well, you know, Tyrone were well beating us at the time, so maybe my head was probably not where it should have been. But it might have a psychological effect to have one of your brothers, and that's the way these teammates see each other, to have his leg in that kind of a state. Jeez, it's just horrific, and my heart goes out to him.
Yeah, and it probably, it's not that important, but it probably took the sting out of the game as well. Like, you know, definitely it came out of the second half and it was all guns blazing, and then it just completely slowed down a bit.
Yeah, and the thing about it is, like, not that you'd ever, this sounds terrible, but like, you'd never wish an injury on anyone, but like, Tom Parsons actually conducts himself on the pitch in such a sort of an honest way as well. Yeah. He never gets involved in any of this, in any sort of stuff that you kind of say, ah, he's a bit of an idiot, that lad, you know. So when it happens to a guy like him, you're almost, you know, there's almost an extra sense of, Jesus, isn't that terrible, because it was just such an unfortunate injury. Comes across as a really really decent fella, very honest and committed guy from Mayo, and generally like never lets them down, in fairness, in terms of his effort or his endeavour, and he was actually having a good game as well, and you know, possibly made an impact on the overall result with him leaving the field.
No, pretty sad now, and hopefully he'll get well soon. I wanted to mention the Carlo jersey and the Wexford jersey, lads. Did you see Carlo? It's almost like Kerry in the 80s. Like, I mean, I love it. It's like, get rid of that loop-de-loop lollipop kind of thing. And like, I mean, all these little changes Carlo were making, I think, now the red was still there, but it was a subtle line across the middle of it. But it was like, I don't know, it was like an old school Kerry jersey. I thought it was brilliant. The Wexford one was unbelievable. It was from 1918 when they won the four in a row. It was the centenary year. And like, I came into the game and I asked one of the lads beside me, like an idiot, Wexford, no sponsors for the football team. Like, I didn't really even notice. Like, I mean, and then they had the big white square on
that
the back
really
to
nice
show their numbers.
Well,
class.
Yeah.
Like, if I was Wexford, I'd be leaving it like that, because I don't like the Wexford jersey, and it was just the bit of purple at the top and then all yellow, because they tried to mix it up with too much purple and yellow throughout it anyways. Anyways, more new styles of jerseys. Another thing that caught my eye, lads, was Killian Brady was yellow carded. So everybody's been warned here. Killian Brady was yellow carded yesterday for not wearing a gum shield. Who refereed the game?
David Goff.
That's his thing.
Yeah,
that's his thing
for the year now, and that's his thing in Meath football. And listen, if don't come crying to the GAA hour, I'm telling any GAA, any intercounty players, if you're playing a match, David Goff is the referee, and you think you're going to be the smart man and not wear your gum shield.
Absolutely. You heard it here first.
Well, here, like, I don't like wearing a gum sheet, but I just carry it in my socks. So if ever I do have
you'll take your yellow and you'll
put it on. Yeah.
That's completely stupid.
I'm an honest player, though. I'll never get an yellow.
But if you're already on a yellow, you'll have to take it immediately.
Yeah, well, if you lose your teeth, it doesn't matter whether you're yellow carded or not.
I played a couple of games junior there. I haven't worn a gum shield at all. Nothing's ever been said to me. So, like, I mean, you know, this, you know,
you
the
mustn't
referees
have been talking too much.
We're just harder, Willie. You see, we just get on with it.
Maybe it is. I meant to mention the Wexford penalty, lads. So you're this is wonder whether I got mixed messages. And it was actually Paul McLaughlin said after the game. He said, "We thought the time was up because on the previous kick out, the ref said there was so much time left." But that was the previous kick out. Was it not confirmed? Is this the last kick of the game, or is there another play? Like, he didn't specify that that was the case, and it's a really difficult one. Like Conan was saying to me, when it's a draw, you have a shot to nothing. Like, if you're a point down, you'll tap over the point because you need that, and everyone will understand it. But you pretty much have, you'd imagine, the draw is there in the bag, and this is a shot to nothing to win it. Like, Keane, I know for a fact you would go for a goal in that.
Well, I have a bit of previous experience on this as well. Our club played in a quarter final of a championship one year, and it was maybe the season before I started playing. I was maybe under 16 at the time, and I remember watching the game, and it was a draw match, and we got a penalty, and it was decided to chip the ball over the bar. The opposition team went down the field, kicked an equalising point, won the kick out, kicked the winning point, knocked us out. So we were playing an under 21 semi-final pretty soon after that, and we had a penalty again. I was taken at this stage, so maybe because I had seen this previously and saw the bad thing that came out of it, I went for goal, scored the penalty. The opposition did have another attack, and they would have definitely scored a point with their next attack, but they had to try and get a goal, and we were able to hold on and win the game. Then it came on, played a senior championship match, draw match against the county champions. We got a penalty. It was a very, very low scoring game, very low scoring. Can't remember the exact score, but less than double digits for both teams. I clipped the penalty over the bar because the referee had told me, basically, this is it, it's the last kick. Why take the chance? Clipped it over the bar. We won by a point. So I think there's all sorts of different scenarios here. Like, you can go for a goal in that scenario, miss, and you're an awful idiot altogether. But I think you have to look at the context of the game. Like, that Wexford Leash match was such a high scoring end to end type of contest that I think you have to go for the jugular in that scenario.
Leash has scored about 13 or 14 points in that second half.
If it was Mayo Galway, I think you look at the state of the game and you say the percentage thing here is to go for the point. You know, so it's a very difficult one to gauge. And look at it, sometimes you take, you know, it's sort of a scenario of where you have possession near the end of a game and you're winning by a point. Do you try and get the second point to go ahead and give the opposition a kick out where they have a chance of having possession, or do you just hold the ball? The opposition can't score if you have the ball, so you take the risk of keeping possession and not pressing forward. You could be turned over, it could end up in your net. So, like, there's all of these things, I think, at the time people have to think on their feet and judge the game on its merits.
As Johnny Jones said, like, I suppose, like, obviously a lot of this is hindsight. If Graham Brodie kicks that out and Wexford win it and the referee blows full time whistle, what a brilliant decision, you know. But, like, I mean, I just know from watching it myself that when that penalty was awarded, I just threw my head on the ground and went, oh, we're gone. Balls anyways. And then I saw him tap it over and I was rejuvenated. I was up again, and I can imagine the Leash players were like, oh my god, we actually still have one chance. So if the referee was saying there that that's not the last kick of the game, I don't know, just turn the screw, knocked him out
when, like, you have the chance.
And the GA penalties now are so much easier, they're right in, like, it's easier to score them.
Yeah, well, look, again, it's, you know, hindsight is 20/20 in all of these scenarios. Like, it's, as you say, if Wexford had won the kick out and held possession and won by the point, you'd say, oh, great decision, sensible option, wasn't trying to be a hero, just took the right option. So I think when you have a penalty, though, you do have ample opportunity to get your whole team in position for the next opposition's kick out.
True.
So I'm not sure, did Leash take a short kick out, or was it to the contest?
Short kick out.
Like,
and they worked the ball the whole way up.
That's completely unforgivable.
Naive.
So I think if if in that position you kick a point and then the, and then Laois, you know, win a mark in the middle of the field amongst four or five men, then you have to say, well, we gave ourselves every chance. You know, that was just a great bit of play from a Laois midfielder, and you know, you criticise, you know, you say maybe we could have done better. But to kick a point and then concede the initiative, concede possession straight away on on perfect playing conditions against a team who've already scored, what, 13 points in the second half, like that's not playing the game. That's that's maybe losing your head a little bit, or maybe having the, that's a terrible thing to say, but maybe the fear of victory. You know, Wexford have lost so many games this season, maybe they just didn't know how to get over the line.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Listen,
and I was sort of comparing it to Johnny Heaney. Like, he could have just as easily have put that over, the way Sean Kelly went through and fisted it over, but he went for it when he had the chance.
Yeah, he did. He turned, geez, that was a huge moment in the game. I'd have put that over. Now, obviously, we've discussed how bad I was at scoring goals, so you have to know what your bloody strengths are. Johnny Heaney, that's his third goal. He scored two against Donegal last year. I like Johnny Heaney as a player. We're going to come back after this, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that the big match in Connacht. Come here, I want you to talk us through the goal you scored in the county final after 15 seconds. I want you to tell me when you had goal on your mind.
Yeah, you've probably had a few 15 seconds experiences yourself. Break me off, show me what you got, because I
don't want no one minute man. Yeah, so I was obviously at this game in Castlebar yesterday, and I waited around. I had to wait a long time to get Damien Comer to talk to me because he was out taking a lot of pictures, but I eventually caught up with him, and here that is.
Damien, I'm waiting 20 minutes for you to get in off the pitch there. The selfie generation has the whole thing messed up.
Sometimes that can be harder than playing the match itself. trying to get in for a shower, but I don't know, great scenes down here. Obviously, it was always going to be a really tough battle coming down to Castlebar to get the win. And look, I think it shows in the delight of the supporters what it meant to them.
It does mean a lot. Like, I mean, Galway looks, it looks like football's really kicking off with Galway, you know, when you see all the people out on the pitch like that.
Yeah, I suppose the last 2 years when we're down here 2 years ago again, there was huge celebrations after we finally beaten Mayo for the first time in a long time, and then we're down here again as it happened for the kind of final, beating Roscommon. So I think McHale Park is probably, it probably was a daunting place to come for a few years, but it's actually somewhere we've had quite a bit of success as of late now and again today. So it's a massive one for the fans. They went through enough bad years, and it's great that we're on the up again.
What was the mindset like going into the game? Because a lot of people were saying like Mayo needed to win this more than Galway did.
Yeah, well, I suppose look at it, first round of championship, it was going to be a long road, even though it's only an extra game for whoever had lost it. But no, obviously there was that perspective, but I think no team wanted to lose it, and it would have been challenging for everyone whoever had lost it to come back into it. But no, look, it was a must-win game for both teams, and glad that we came on the right side of it.
Yeah, and I think that was really reflected in the tactics, really, because I know you were playing defensively all year, but Mayo played almost more defensively than you did today.
Yeah, they did. I suppose they were on the losing end of championship to this setup, and they probably had to come with something different this year to try and break down our system, and that's what they did. And it probably nearly worked, only for the sending off in the first half again. That's 2 years in a row now they've been down to 14 against us, so probably doesn't really give a true reflection of where both teams are at. But that's the way the game went, and it was unfortunate for Mayo, but look, we'll take what we can get.
Yeah, it looked like a straight red to me anyways. I don't know, did you get a good look at it? Like, I mean, Paul Henry I saw his lip on the way into the dressing room there, he was fairly burst.
Yeah, no, I remember, I seen it, and I said it to I think it was Chris Barrett, that was side of, I'd say he could be in trouble for this because he led with the elbow, probably a bit accidental at the same time, but again it's a dangerous challenge to charge the elbow.
And would you chat away with Barrett over things like that? Like, I mean, he was marking you tightly, but it was a friendly kind of thing.
No, we wouldn't it'd be more of a war of words now. I'd say that was a few of the nicer words.
what was the game itself? Was a game of chess, like we've seen these games before, you know, there was a lot of bad wides, you couldn't get any momentum, a lot of playing on the outside of the defensive screen, you know, like, I mean, it was your kind of classic tight, cagey, nervous defensive game.
Yeah, well, I suppose it's with the build up and everything coming into this game, you often find that it's not going to be the free flowing game that everyone expects it to be. Again, it's championship, both teams want to win, and they'll do whatever it takes to win, and if that's sitting back and minding all angles, then it is. But Look, and I suppose that's kind of the way it went. When they were attacking, we kind of set off a small bit, and when we attacked, they set off a small bit. So
yeah,
okay, it's kind of the way the game has gone. But
yeah,
glad to come out with it.
That was my first time to see you playing this year. Like, you played with two up all the time, and you tried to play someone then holding the half forward line. So it's not a real dour defensive kind of game plan that it's been made out to be.
No, but I think if you look at any team in the country, you'll do well to pick out a team that is more attacking than any of the two teams were out there today. Like,
yeah,
it just isn't happening. It turns out if there is a team attacking with more numbers, then they're conceding an awful lot more as well. So it's just the way the game has gone. Even I said the Dubs do it as well. People think that they're all lovely footballing team, but they're every bit as defensive as Mayo were today, and probably as we were as well during the league.
So it just won't keep you too much longer. But the first half, you got a bit of space. You were able to get those one-on-one situations that you absolutely love. Second half, then, I don't know, did you run out of gas? But the ball, there was a strong wind there as well, so I suppose that quality of ball wasn't coming in.
Yeah, I suppose when it slowed up a bit, Mayo were allowed to get one or two plus ones back, and then it cuts out the supply of the ball. And fairness to Barry, he gave me every bit of it, and we had a good old battle through the game. But
he did.
No, it's probably just dried up possession and a few balls that I probably should have held on to that came into me and I didn't. And look, that's the way it goes.
Yeah.
You win some battles and you lose some battles.
Burke made a difference when he came on. He's a little live wire. You know, he must be a nice little file to have buzzing around you in there.
Yeah, he is. Burke, I know him well from playing with him back in Gerald's days, and early on in first, second, third year, I played with him all through the ranks. So, I'm well used to him. And a lot of lads, Shane would have been in that area as well, coming through the school ranks. So we know each other quite well, and through the under-21 team we played together, so we know what Berkey's capable of. It's probably just he's working in Dublin and it's just tricky to get down for as many sessions, which kind of comes against him. But look at that, it's great that we can have him after a successful year with Curfin.
Yeah, okay, finally, you told me on the podcast it was the start of last year that you want consistency. You're pretty much where you want to be, really, aren't you, after that league and coming back to McHale Park and winning again?
Yeah, I think that's something that we try to instill. The next day out now, obviously, we're going to have another game in 2 or 3 weeks, and that'll judge where we're at consistency wise. I know we worked on it during the league, and every game we went out we were consistent, but again, we want to bring it to Championship, because the Championship was where we lacked it. So
yeah,
look, all eyes are forward to the next game, and hopefully we can bring that intensity into it.
Damien, thanks very much.
So I think it was a little bit naive there with Damien Comer. There was maybe a bit of trash talking going on, which I thought it was maybe going to be like a Sunday morning challenge game where you'll turn around to your man and have a nice friendly chat.
How are you getting on this year?
I'm not sure that's quite how Damien meant
that. When are you in Championship?
We can't get the boys out training, Damien.
You know those lovely little chats. For some, how would I think in a Connacht match, two teams that hate each other, that potentially they were going to discuss the ins and outs of this sending off? Anyways,
sometimes charm can disarm your opponent.
We'll talk about Damien in a little while, but I want to talk about this much maligned Galway system, lads, because I was there in the flesh yesterday to watch it. And they're not as defensive as everybody's making them out to be. You have to trust me on this now. For the whole game, there's two left inside. For the whole game, they don't come outside that 14, 21 yard line. Then you had Shane Walsh standing on the 40. Now, Shane Walsh wanted to stand on the 40. Durkin was going forward. Shane Walsh was being honest and following him. And as he'd follow him back then, Shane Walsh would take a position kind of, you know, around the 45 or whatever. And then Shane Walsh would immediately try to reset onto the 40 to get that shape back on. So they were trying to go with three. In the second half, they went with Comer and Walsh inside and Sean Armstrong on the 40. Now, Sean Armstrong doesn't want to be going back there either, but he was following and again trying to reset to the 40. Then Brannigan went into that role on the 40. So, like, I mean, I can live with three forwards back. What they do really well is Johnny Heaney and Tom Flynn. Tom Flynn started wing forward, Paul Connery midfield with Duggan. Duggan was really good. They're dropping back. So this is what I always say on the show, lads. Drop your two midfielders back. Drop two wing forwards back. That's enough men back. Now, the extra two will come back because they're following men. Now, what I would say to the opposition is the two men that are marking them, stay where you are. Stop dragging four more bodies back into our attacking zone and give Galway two extra defenders. Because Galway, unless this was an evolution from other games, but I didn't see them. Mayo were much more defensive than Galway yesterday. Now, I know the sending off had some, like the second half was really, really defensive. Mayo left no forwards up there. I don't know. Like, I don't, obviously, because you can't talk. I wasn't at the league game, and it's impossible on television to tell unless you're there and you're actually watching this because of a keen interest in Galway. They're not the boogeyman that everybody's trying to make out.
I thought it was interesting because people know, because they have bodies back and they're defending well, people assume that they're this counter-attacking team that
they didn't counter-attack.
Turnovers.
They didn't counter-attack.
They didn't.
No.
The stat was that they got 1-8 from their own kickouts. The ball started their own kickout. They didn't lose the ball. End up going over. Sometimes it was 2 or 3 minutes later. So they're not relying on turnovers and trying to break fast up the pitch.
No,
it was a very slow game. And to be honest, the game's gone way past that now. Anyway, you need to be either really stupid or really bloody unfit to not be able to just get back with a team and stop them from counterattacking you. And Galway have evolved beyond that. I think yes, they are tight in defence and they have zones blocked well, but they do have that outlet. Then I thought they were. I was watching it yesterday, going Jesus. Willie could be right. He said 3 years' time, and this team looked like they've arrived.
Yeah, in the first half, they played some good, any good football or good scores. I thought Galway played it. But you see then, and you see it on television, and then you look, and you know these, like you'll see two sweepers in there. It's Garrett Bradshaw and it's Sweeney, they're two wing backs. It's not. They're not bringing back forwards, plugging them in there. Do you know what I mean? Like Flynn and Heaney will eventually get back there, but they're not camping back there. You know what I mean? They're trying to keep shape. But it'll be Bradshaw and it'll be Sweeney and it'll be O'Donnell and all these lads. They're falling back into this kind of zone around the D and blocking that up. And then you have the midfielders and the wing forwards maybe blocking around the 45. So it looks like, Jesus, that's really defensive. It's not that defensive. If you've got your forwards giving O'Donnell and Bradshaw and these lads something to think about, they might have to push up, you know what I mean? Push out on you.
Yeah, well, I think Galway have a very clear style where they defend their own 45 or slightly inside it. Now, Mayo in the first half dominated possession, Galway in the second half dominated possession. So the team playing against the breeze tried to hold on to it a bit longer, and just by nature the way the game went, Mayo started the game very strongly and were the more dominant team, which meant that they, with the way Mayo play, they have a lot of bodies running from deep. They do force the opposition back. So the point of your forwards, they do have to track runners. Like, you can't allow Paddy Durkin to run up the field unchecked. You know, maybe every now and again you can say, listen, somebody has to take a chance and maybe push on. Like, what I would like to have seen, maybe the next little flick on it is, if Galway are playing with their two men inside and one man on the opposition's 45-metre line, if he has to track a man deep, somebody else in that Galway cohort that are back there should just vacate his defensive position.
That's the next step to move forward
so that, and in fairness to him, Duggan probably did that as soon as they turned over possession, he was gone. But what I'd like to see to make Galway even more efficient, I would think from an attacking perspective, would be if they had somebody who did just cheat, just hang up there. I'm not directly tracking a runner here. I can see we've got a number of bodies here. I'm going to jog forward. I'm going to just bomb on here 40 metres, because if we, on the chance that we do turn it over, we could have a goal on, you know. And sometimes you have to think, well, what's the better result for the team, right? Fair enough, there's enough bodies here, we might concede a score, we might concede something if I leave here, but we could get a goal the opposite, you know. You're kind of flipping a little bit on its head in terms of taking a positive view on it.
The only thing on that is that if Durkin went and Shane Walsh didn't follow him,
I think you have to look at the matchups. You can't leave Durkin go,
but even just regardless of who it is, Colin Boyle was playing a full time sweeper, so Boyle would have just picked Walsh up there. Do you know what I mean?
They weren't really losing anything,
but Walsh was letting Durkin go. You know, it's a difficult one, and you have that little bit of sympathy on the player in that situation.
I think you have to track your runner in those scenarios, but I think where it's nearly always best suited is a midfielder. So for example, if you were in Walsh's position there, you have to go with Durkin because he's threat. But if you were marking Shamie O'Shea and you're playing midfield, you can say, well, he's going to recycle the ball here, but he's not actually going to break forward or break the line. He's going to play on the periphery here. He's going to play cautiously. I can afford to actually just get out of here, or I'll pick up the wing forward or wing back and tell Johnny Heaney, Johnny, stay up there. Just push on 20 metres down the wing there. We don't need you here. You know, we have enough cover. And then if you do turn it over, it's a foot pass to Johnny Heaney, who's then one kick away from having it inside to your two-man inside forward line. Yeah. That was the problem that hurt Galway a lot in the first half. And some of the scores Galway got in the first half were completely wind dependent. Like Shane Walsh kicked one off his left foot that was completely due to the wind, and Comer bombed one over right. He might get it in normal conditions, but the wind certainly helped. So Galway got a couple of scores that were wind dependent that first half, so they should have really gone in at half time behind, despite the fact that they have so much talent and they were solid at the back. Mayo's shot selection was poor and their execution was pretty poor. Like Conor Loftus missed a few chances, fluffed a few attempts. Mayo should have been probably 3 to 4 points ahead at half time in my view, and then the sending off of Dermot O'Connor just meant that in the second half Galway were able to just play the game on their terms. They always had that defensive cover, and to be honest, I think Mayo went too defensive in the second half. Mayo had to take the chance and leave a couple of bodies up the field, because a few scores on the counter attack was probably enough, was probably all that Mayo were going to need.
And that's the thing, and then like they had everybody back at stages, and then they might just leave Andy Moran, and then the huge disconnect. So when Andy got it, he just doesn't have the pace. So you look at the handy scores Comer got. He was, you can get that down to Comer in a one on one, and Comer likes to take his man on, and more times than not, if it's a one on one, he'll go past him like a shot. Moran can't do that. Shane Walsh can go past his man like a shot. Now Shane Walsh, it was infuriating again yesterday. Should have had five from play, concentration or something.
Why
he's so talented.
He shoot? There's sometimes he should be shooting and he doesn't. He checks back
out. Because when he shoots, he usually kicks it wide.
He scuffs them so badly that they actually roll along the ground into the goalkeeper's hands. It's weird. Like I've heard of kicking it into goalie's hands, but he takes it into new levels. He misconnects. I just can't get my head around it. Like, I mean, somebody needs to sit down and talk to Shane Walsh or coach him, or I don't know, is it pressure situations, or does he have too much time? Because it often happens when there's nobody even close to him and you're like, this is a gimme, and then he just dribbles along, like totally misconnects with it. And this is from, he just confuses me, Shane Walsh.
Yeah,
I love
he
it. I love
so
him.
Talented.
I love him.
Yeah.
I love him. Yeah. And he infuriates me as well.
Sometimes when boys are that fast, you know, they practice shooting when they're standing still. It's always free kicks they're practicing, and they're never practicing
at
going
top
full speed.
And
they don't appreciate how fast they are.
Well, there must be something like this, lads, because you know that he takes freeze. Is he practicing freeze too much and not practicing that full petal kind of kick, or is somebody able to stop and say, Shane, stop, if you've got 5 yards of pace, just take that, slow down one or two and then kick it over, or you know, or maybe if slowing down is his problem, stay speeding up the same speed and clip it over the bar. Like, somebody needs to study when this happens. I don't have the time. No, but identify the situations where this is happening, where these are going like really bad connections, and say, Shane, this is what you're doing wrong in that situation, because I'd be pretty sure there's a common reason for this.
But then the difference, like you mentioned Andy Moore, like I think the way Mayo were attacking was sort of contributing to how Galway were set up as well, because you had Andy Moore inside getting so easily doubled up because Conor Loftus was coming out to the 45 looking for a handy hand pass. Jason Doherty was sort of following him out there, and it was like, they don't need you out here. Aidan O'Shea doesn't need you standing right beside him. They hand pass it off. Well, and it made Andy Moore just get gobbled up.
Yeah, it's true. And in the first half, I would have no, like, the only criticism I would have of Mayo in the first half is that they just missed too many chances. They had enough opportunities, but they controlled the game. They played really well. In the second half, I thought they were very disappointing. I know they were down to 14 men, and you know you have to look at it and say it was hugely energy sapping what they had to do. Galway, because they were playing against the breeze, were carrying the ball all the time, so that did drag Mayo forwards back into their own defensive area. But I thought Mayo, an experienced team like Mayo, should have, you know, they should have just said, a couple of guys need to just stay up the field. Yeah. We don't need you dropping back, like even tracking a runner, because Mayo had gone into their shell. Mayo were not pressing up or tackling Galway high up the field. They weren't even tackling them in the middle third. So it was effectively, it was almost like a soccer match where they needed to have somebody held up the field and the rest of them were defending the scoring zone. That was it, the edge of the box. So they didn't need, there was nobody in that middle third doing anything other than jogging back into position. So Mayo did not need to drag all their forwards back up the pitch. They should have held their position, even if that meant letting runners go, because all the runners were doing was running forward against the wind into a position where the scoring zone was very, very small. So Mayo had enough bodies, even if Mayo were outnumbered 10 bodies to 6 in their own defence, they still should have been able to block out the scoring zone.
Yeah, Killian O'Connor made a difference, and he kind of held the half forward line, and he got on a lot of ball and kind of gave in some good ball to Andy and scored a point. He kind of played wing forward on Cottle Sweeney, who I think is a weak link in that Galway defence. Maybe when Brannigan comes back now, Johnny Heaney might go back wing back. And Galway have a real look of a team about them with one or two more changes. Ian Burkle's changed the game.
The subs were the difference
now,
maker.
Now this is the question with Ian Burke: do you, because he made such an impact, do you leave him as a sub? Because this is the difference between Ian Burke and Shane Walsh and Comer, and you can see it in the Galway team. You kick the ball into Comer, nobody runs off Comer's shoulder because they know Comer's going to go like a bull to the goal, and he's brilliant and he's exciting and he's everything. You give it into Shane Walsh, again nobody's running off Shane Walsh's shoulder because Shane Walsh has electric speed and he goes around the outside of his man, and the only time they pass it is if they get blocked up, they'll throw it back out. When Ian Burke gets the ball, boom, you have two or three lads running at angles off him because they know this man's job is to throw it out and throw it. It completely transformed all the players out around the 45. They knew they could, and Shane Walsh gave Burke one lovely diagonal ball, and suddenly their diagonal balls are coming in, and Burke, he's not even looking to turn, he's looking out the field to throw that out to lads coming past him. It's not rocket science, but he's just the complete counterbalance to the two lads. Now, you need the two lads. That's brilliant to have that release, to be able to give it to a lad and know, I might not need to do anything more here. These lads are just so good, they'll take him on. But Burke offers that thing different, and I think Burke as a foil for Comer is the perfect situation.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Burke's movement is exceptionally good. He's always on the move. Very, very clever movement. His handling is absolutely phenomenal. Yeah. Like, he has the ball, you know, he nearly always makes it stick first time, and the ball is gone. I slightly disagree with you. I think there are runners coming off Comer and Walsh a lot of the time, but Comer and Walsh never lift their head. Every time they win possession, and in fairness, it's because they're so good that they're looking to get their own score. But there are occasions where, as soon as they at times they receive it and they're isolated and they have to do that.
Often on the wings they get their ball.
And they kind of are maybe a little bit pre-programmed that when they win it, they have to try and make something happen. But there were occasions, you know, I've seen it in several games this season, but particularly at the weekend as well, there were occasions where as soon as they received the ball, if they had immediately offloaded, there were runners coming off the shoulder, and Burke did that brilliantly.
Did.
You know, and he has to start for Galway, in my view. Now, you can understand the benefit of holding him in reserve when you see the impact he made, and Sean Kelly made a big impact
as
well.
Yeah,
you know, and
I've never been sold on that Kelly, but
very good.
They're
clever footballers. Yeah. Like, they do the right thing. They play it nice and simple. Like, it's unspectacular. It's sort of the way Dublin attack as well. You know, there's nothing spectacular done. It's all just nice and simple. Move the ball, move the ball. Don't take it to contact if you don't need to. Runners off the shoulder. And that's what created the goal for Heaney was, you know, I think Burke caught it, received it off to Kelly. Kelly did very well. He sort of manufactured the space for him pretty well, and Heaney came off the shoulder brilliantly, but he had the vision to see the pass.
And it's four changes that Galway made that ended up contributing to the goals. We've already played it in. Burke got it, as you say, Kelly, and then Heaney, who was further back. So we talk about Mayo sometimes, maybe they don't have the changes to come into a game, whereas Galway were able to make four different changes, and all four of them combined, they win that match.
Yeah, absolutely. And the Mayo subs didn't have the required impact, really. I thought they weren't served nearly as well as the contribution that the Galway substitutes made to the game.
No, they definitely didn't. And like, I mean, I think Galway are nearly there, lads. I'm honestly, and I know that game got bad press, but I think they're evolving and adding little bits and pieces, and they're learning as they go. And I'd be surprised against Sligo, you'd be sure that they might gamble with the lad in the half forward line, whereas they might not have the guts to do it, you know, because a lot of tension there yesterday. Like, I mean, there really was. It was a clash of two big games, and like, it was like an Ulster Championship match.
It was a big pressure match.
And like, I mean, the thing with Walsh, and does he follow Durkin, and like, if a midfielder picks him up, maybe a midfielder is programmed to go back into his zone, so then does he have to come out of that? You're almost getting into soccer kind of analytics at this stage.
I think actually Mayo's matchups were wrong as well. I think that Durkin on Walsh was a bad matchup for Mayo, because it took Walsh and Galway were clever in that
he followed him into the full forward line.
Walsh a lot of the time spent his time in the full forward line, and that completely takes away the strength of Paddy Durkin for Mayo, which is on the attack. When he's left in there on defensive duty, I mean, he's competent, but it's not where he does his best work. So Mayo again and usually Rochford gets these things right. I thought that was a bad matchup the way it ended up for Mayo, and there was a couple of them like that in the game.
Yeah, the Barrett and Comer matchup looked like it wasn't going ideally for Barrett in the first half, but Comer tired in the second half. Like Barrett, I wouldn't even say Barrett got on top of Comer. Like Comer mentioned there, he led one or two. He didn't get on much ball, and the one or two he got on, he didn't make the most of it. You know, he led a fall, or Barrett was up fairly close to him. But it was interesting, lads, and like this was a weird one when the two changes were made at the start of the game. So the first one was Chris Barrett comes in place of Jerk Hafferty. A big cheer went up around McHale Park. Just thinking, poor Jerk Hafferty. Now, I don't want to be unfair on the Mayo support. Maybe they're cheering Barrett after him being so brilliant in the All-Ireland final and he hadn't seen him all year, like, yeah, rather than, oh, thank Christ. I don't know. I think Jerk Hafferty would have been a better man on Comer. They didn't hit Comer with one high ball yesterday. It was all out in front of him, and geez, the way Comer was able to just brush past, there was a noticeable size difference between Barrett and Comer. He just brushed past him. You know, you wouldn't brush past Cafferkey. I think Cafferkey's too maligned, lads. He's not great in the air, yes, but he's actually a tight marker for a big man.
Yeah, and also possibly Barrett missing from the heart of that defence at centre half back, as where he kind of finished up playing last season, was a bit of a blow to Mayo as well, particularly in this. Now, look, when the game got tight in the second half and there wasn't much space, Barrett was very tight on Comer and did well, but there was very limited opportunity for Comer to get onto the ball. And as you say, he did kind of tire. I'd say Burke coming on was the tonic that he needed as well, because he wasn't maybe just making the quantity or the of runs that he needed.
No, his runs had slowed down, and he's had his hands on his hips, and he did look tired. But just finish up on Galway, lads, because this is why I think, and like, I mean, like, just around their middle third, Duggan, he's a big strong man, like he
was very good.
Reminds me like of a farmer or something, you know, like a hardy bit of stuff. Like, and Cook is a big hardy whore as well,
yeah.
And Conroy is a big man, and like Flynn was taken off, came on, won one or two marks, and I question marks over his kind of, you know, bottle, yeah, maybe, because like, I mean, he has a lot of talent, but goes out of midfield, wing forward, a better position for him. He stood up and was counted and winning a couple of marks when they were needed. And I think they're transformed. I think Galway are transformed. Honest to God, I think, like, I mean, they're definitely, on the evidence of the league so far this year and of yesterday, in a battle away from home against one of the top two teams that blew Kerry away last year. Like, I mean, Galway are in that top, up into that top four now. You'd be doing well to argue against that.
Yeah, I think they're here, and I'm interested. I think the Super 8 is going to help them as well, where they get two bites of the cherry. You know, if they lose, they're not out of the quarterfinals, so that sort of pressure is off them. They have three games. But I think what it'll come down to again is maybe the fullback line, and we'll see when there's a better, sharper full forward line. It's not just Andy Moore on two big men. You know, how will they cope with that then? Because you're right, like, they seem to have a blend all over the pitch now of big men, proper footballers, the right amount of speed, you know, ball winners everywhere, but it's just how are they going to cope at fullback?
And just to finish up, the message is, if you're playing Dublin and Dublin want to leave four forwards up, let them leave four forwards up, because you're only shooting yourself in the foot by going attacking and dragging loads of extra men. Do you get me? Or say if Galway are trying to leave three or four up, leave your half backs in their positions, because you're only because Galway will happily go with you, and then they'll take a then they'll go back and fix a hole. You often see Dublin, everyone says, oh, Dublin are a defensive team when they want to, because they've 13 men back. That's not by choice, that's because they've followed men back, and now you're screwed against Dublin because they've 13 big huge physical men, and there ain't no getting through those lads, do you know? So stay back. If Dublin want to drop a man or two back, let them drop a man or two back. The chances are, like, I mean, it's only one or two. You might have better chance of getting through there than if two of your men come up with their two men, and then they go goal side of those two men, and then suddenly you've all your players on the outside and they've all their players on the inside, and then it's difficult.
It is difficult, yeah. Look, sometimes you just have to be clever. You know, I've mentioned before, defenders coming up and actually just getting in the way and bringing their man with them. So,
yeah,
look, it's much more difficult to do that in Croke Park as well. The one reservation I still have about Galway is I'm still just not convinced at how well they attack. And it was a low scoring game yesterday. There was a stiff breeze again.
They scored 8 in the first half. Was it 8-7? What was it at half time?
7-5.
7-6. 7-6, yeah. 7 with the wind's not great.
So I still see them. They're still below. You know, I still think they have a lot of improving to do if they're going to win the All Ireland. I mean, look, that's a fairly obvious statement. But all their games this year, they've had one game in Croke Park, they need games in Croke Park. Like, the Super 8 thing is the big thing for them. They need that experience in there. And they need a couple of games, actually, where there's no weather conditions that are affecting how the game can be played.
It always seems to, yeah.
Because they've yesterday again was a game, obviously a game of two halves, where you're playing against such a strong breeze in the first, playing with such a strong breeze in the first half, that it completely changes how both you and the opposition can play the game. That doesn't happen when you're playing Croke Park in big games later on in the championship. So Galway need, because all league football is completely dictated, or certainly a large portion of the game is of how you can play is dictated by the weather conditions and the pitch conditions. So the experience that they'll gather over the next couple of games in the Connacht Championship, hopefully on, you know, sort of, we'll call them proper championship days, where there's no, where there's no weather factors at play, and see how they, see how they play in those conditions. That's the next thing for me, because I still think that there's another level that they have to get to convince me that they're going to challenge Dublin when it really matters.
Yeah,
Michael, but they're a long way there though.
Is it Michael or Micheál Daly? He's coming back too, and he's a great player as well.
He's a quality player.
Quickly,
they have the talent.
They have. They've got an abundance of talent, and that's what I based nearly my All Ireland prediction on last year. Still have this year and next year, by the way. And I'm a lot more enthused after going to Castlebar. A lot more enthused. Anyways, whether obviously Dublin, like, it's going to be a really big tough task. Quick one on Mayo, as the last thing we'd want to do is write Mayo off, but they have a poxy run now to an All-Ireland semi-final. Is it 8 games in 10 weeks or 6 games in 8 weeks, something like
7
that.
And 9 I think
7 and 9 Jesus, I got both of them wrong. It was in the middle of the two, and like, I mean, it's a difficult one. Like, I still think they'll get there. I still think they'll get to the business end of the championship, but I do agree with Colin O'Rourke. They're a team that's in decline, their age profile's going up, their players that is coming through are nowhere near the level of All-Ireland winning standard. While they might be alright inter-county players, they're not of a standard that they're replacing, and that's the reality of it. So Mayo need to make hay in the next year or two, because that's going to be their chance gone.
The only problem is it's an open draw in the qualifiers now, so they could just get Monaghan or Tyrone in round one, and I'd say they're out if they get them that early. You know, I think if they get them later in the championship, then they'll probably overcome them because they're Mayo. But if they get somebody like that now in round one, Cavan are there, Derry will be back there after he's done a goal. There's just going to be a couple of tricky enough games, but they could just as easily get Waterford as well.
Yeah, so it's hard to know. Would you be right? You wouldn't be writing them off, Keane.
No, I'm very concerned for them in terms of their attacking play. They're just lacking something there.
I mean, pace.
The players that have come in, Loftus again. I know it's difficult conditions and playing against a strong team, but he didn't do enough for me. They really badly need a fit Killian O'Connor back. They're going to be missing Dermot O'Connor the next day. Obviously Parsons is gone. They need Donal Vaughan back fit. They need Harrison back in the team. They need Keegan back. Now, if they have all those guys and they can gradually get them through, they want a kind draw. I mean,
you're right.
I think how Monaghan or Tyrone, how that game goes and how it finishes for both of those teams, if in their own camp they're putting a huge emphasis on that match and winning that game, and the Ulster Championship being a big priority, it could be very difficult for whatever team loses that to turn it around and get to the same level again for the qualifiers. But I think that Monaghan and Tyrone are the real dangers coming through the qualifiers for Mayo. I would think that they will probably be too strong for most of the other teams in it. But they would certainly like to avoid them, certainly for the first two or three weekends of the qualifiers. I'd say they'd like to get a couple of soft draws, ideally. Well, I don't know whether it's any benefit to them playing in Castlebar. They don't seem to perform that well there. Maybe they need to be on the road, but whatever way, they need a couple of nice draws to just build that momentum and get their players back from injury and build that sort of cohesion. They are a team that responds better when they are playing week on week, so I certainly wouldn't rule them out.
Yeah, no, me neither. Right, alright, we'll be back next with Performance of the Weekend.
Conan Doherty is a fantastic analyst, and I mean, I really heed what he would say in your programme.
I think Tyrone are going to win. I'm going to go with them. As much as I predicted Dublin to win the All-Ireland at the start of the year, I just think Tyrone are going too well. They're unaffected by the other team. Too well set up. I think they've been preparing for Dublin for 2 years. They're ready for them. I'm going to go with it, man.
Performance of the weekend, and I'm going to give this to teams, lads. Not to say that we're going to give mugs to everybody on the team. We might give them to the manager.
Let me guess, Leisha involved there.
That's when we do get mugs eventually made up here. But first one, obviously, is Leash. Unbelievable comeback, 10 points down at half time. There was a whole load of good things about their second half performance, an awful lot of bad things about the first half. I remember I tweeted at half time saying Leisure out, Leisure 10 points down, but I wouldn't rule them out. And the reason I wouldn't rule them out is because they had so many chances in the first half. Like, I mean, John O'Loughlin told me after the game that they went in at half time and they had 16 chances to Wexford's 15 scoring chances, and they're 10 points down. So Leash were always in that game. They had a penalty turned down, they had two open or one on ones with the goalkeeper, they had 3 points that they would have put over in their sleep, and they missed them. So, you know, it could have been an awful lot closer. Donny Kingston started centre half forward. Madness, won't ever happen again. He doesn't have energy levels for centre forward, and he is a finisher, and he's a nightmare in the full forward line. And the ball Leash gave him in the second half was unreal. Diagonal balls, it was like they were coached so well to give this to him, but he didn't start there, so that was a little bit of a confusing one. But Begley stood up, midfield dominated the whole way through the game, and that was great to see. John O'Loughlin and Kieran Lillis, who was brilliant, because they were cleaned out against Carlow in the league final. So there was a lot of good things. Subs came on. Paul Kingston was outstanding. Niall Donoher was really, really good. His distribution is brilliant, and I'd have him on the team all the time. Ross Munley, as usual, just his lively self. He was leading the line in there with Kingston in the second half, and he was even trying really hard in the first half. And I caught up with him after the match on the pitch. So here that is.
Yes, Johnner.
Ross, how do you explain that?
Look, we just stuck in the game. We knew the chances were coming. It was a funny game because we'd get a score back and they'd go straight back up the field in the second half, and we couldn't just sort of get ahead and stay ahead of them. But credit to the boys when the pressure came on, and you know, maybe they should have gone for a goal on the penalty.
Yeah, what do you think of that? Because, like, I mean, the penalty's in that bit further now, and that was game over.
Yeah, probably, and maybe if that had gone for it and missed it, he would have blown it up because it was a draw game at that stage. But Garrett Dillon, what a score to draw it up and give us our chance, and then it probably only looked like one team was going to win it in extra time. But to be fair to them, they came after a team that having such a poor league campaign, they really came out on fire, and we just weren't at it on the first half, and we weren't up to the intensity of it, and that's something we're going to have to look at.
What was John saying at half time? Because John O'Loughlin was telling me there that there was like 16 chances to 15 or something in the first half. Yeah, like, he missed some unbelievably easy chances.
Yeah, we did, and our shot conversion wasn't good enough, whilst theirs was way ahead. But look, we knew ourselves at half time it wasn't good enough from our own performance, and we knew that if we came out and we started getting our passes together and get a little bit of momentum, and we just tacked on point after point after point after point, and we started to find a little bit of momentum, and that's ultimately what took us back into the game, and we kept believing that if we kept plugging away we'd get there.
Yeah, you missed an easy free. Yeah. Donny missed a tap over from play.
O'Connor missed four or five goal chances.
O'Connor missed a goal chance, and we're still able to turn a 10 point deficit around. It's
It was bizarre, but you know, we all missed chances, but we all dug in, we all got back on the horse, we kept going.
The point I'm making, it was a domination really in the second half. The second half performance was almost flawless.
Yeah, no, we were really pleased with that, and you know, for this particular group that have had some difficult days and some young players coming in and driving us on, I thought Benny Carroll was fantastic in the second half and just giving us that bit of legs that maybe lads like you would have had over the years. But no, it was credit to the manager. He made the right changes, gave us those legs, and we powered on in the second half, and to be honest with you, as cruel as it is on Wexford, I think we deserved our win.
How you're around a long time, you're nearly past the veteran stage now. Where does that rank, though? Because that must have been a thrilling game. Like, I was jumping out of my seat. What was it like to be involved in that? Or where would that rank?
Yeah, I suppose, like, if for me in the second half, you're just waiting for the next ball, because when you do make a mistake, you're under pressure to try and do something good and do something positive. And you know, we were all in that boat. Anyone who missed chances, but no, that's right up there. That's a 16 point swing at one stage there, from being 10 points down. But look, we've been working hard, and John has been at us all year to try and find something different, and today we came up with the goods when maybe we wouldn't have before. But look, you wipe the board clean again, and we've Westmead in a couple of weeks, and that's going to be a bigger challenge again.
Yeah, and it's been a long time since we've heard that shitty leash chants. It must have been nice to hear that.
Yeah, and you were leading it off.
Ross, thanks
a million. All right, listen, good to see you.
So lads, it's officially back. Leash, 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 leash.
The worst chant of all time is back.
It is the worst.
God almighty, I used to hate that.
But you know how to do it. It starts off really slow, so it's leash. Leash.
I don't care. Stop saying it.
It whips up in a friendly. The only chance.
The only thing that's worse is me-id.
Is that what they do?
Oh, God, but it's horrendous.
Do you want a worse one?
Go on.
Oofalia. Oofalia. I heard it one time. I was like, oh, thank God there is a worse one than leash, 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 leash. So anyways, right, that's leash taken care of as Performance of the Weekend nomination. Next one up is Carlo. I think we all tipped loud last week, did we, Conan? Or you weren't here, it was me, Stevie and Connor. Maybe one of them went for Carlo, could have been Stevie, I'm not sure, but I went for loud anyway, and I feel stupid for going for loud for the fact that loud were operating Division 2, Division 4. There's a clear difference in the level that both counties are at, but this year there's not, because Loud are in disarray, and I thought maybe they might turn it around for the championship and they were in a tough Division 2. Clearly not, they just fell apart. Carlo scored 217. I think it was Sean Gannon, one of the Carlo players, gave me a nice little touch on Twitter last night about scoring 217 for a defensive team. But we all know defensive teams can run up big scores. That's not proof. Tyrone run up huge scores. That's not to say if you play a stupid team like Loud were yesterday, of course you'll run up scores if they're naive enough not to track your runners. Like, I mean, running up big scores is not always a defence for defensive teams. If you meet a tactically sound team, you won't run up big scores. Anyways, Carlo, New Jersey's brilliant championship win. I tell you, Carlo have got to the level to now where that result didn't have Turlough on the Sunday game, and you know, it wasn't like, oh, poor Carlo get a win. Carlo are like kind of found a level now where they're solid, you know, they're at an awfully level now, and they're like, you know,
they're a solid, competent, consistent team, and that's what they've been working very hard towards, and fair play to them, a comprehensive victory. Now Louth are incomplete. They've had just a horrible season. They've lost a number of players from last year. They're not in a good place. And it's no surprise, really, at the end of it, that Carlo, who are a team who are in a good place in terms of their cohesive unit, together for a sustained period of time, whereas Louth are basically trying to build a new team and it just hasn't worked out for them. They've had some bad results. They were playing at a level that didn't suit them this year in Division 2. Really and truly, they needed to be down in a lower grade, and you know, they wouldn't be in such a bad place now if they had been at that lower level, you know, building nicely instead of just getting kind of soundly beaten every weekend, which is very, very demoralising for a team.
I was great to see Paul Broderick back on flying form yesterday, because he's a class act. He's a big man. They need him so badly. Their system depends on him shooting the lights out. And against Leash in the league final, he probably didn't have one of his better games, but he was back on fire yesterday. And when he's on fire, then you'll see some fruits of their kind of system. But without him, it's a systems failure, really. Like, that's how dependent they are on him, and that's the reality of it. So it was great to see him back. He was flying it. I have to mention Pete McGrath's comments after the game, lads, because this is a manager that was ousted from Fermanagh. Now, obviously Pete McGrath is a legendary figure in the GAA. He's won two All-Irelands with Down, and I've nothing but respect for what he did with Down, but that was in the 1990s. That was sometimes I think with players playing back then, how can they talk about this modern game? Because it's like chalk and cheese. Sometimes I'm looking at it going, Jesus Christ, I wouldn't like this game. I don't think I could really fit into this game. But anyways, Pete McGrath was ousted then for Fermanagh, who the players revolted and said that they had enough of him. Now, he got one great year to the qualifiers. I don't know. There's talk that his number two was really good, and you know, there's different kind of reasons often for this, because Fermanagh played a very modern style. Now, Loud looked like disjointed and looked like they had no system yesterday. So, like, I mean, if Pete was consistent with his system with Fermanagh, you'd imagine he'd come in and Loud would be a very well structured team, but they don't seem to be. And anyways, I'll get to what he said, which I thought was just unbelievable. He says, serious questions have to be asked about players and their attitude and their ambition, what they hope to achieve as individual players. Now, he said that on the Sunday game, interviewed after the game. Like, I mean, imagine that being your stock answer, to throw your to put all the blame onto the players. And this is you after being ousted from your last job. Like, I would say if the Loud players don't have a meeting now and say, Pete, thanks very much for your efforts, but if we're not all in this together when we have a bad loss, well, we're not really too bothered with you.
And they've just been relegated, having lost every game as well, so there's obviously going to be a bit of I don't know, disconnect in there with the players are going to be a bit of talking anyway behind Pete's back, I'd imagine, if it's like any other team. So.
Yeah, look, it's not working out. It hasn't worked out for them. And it's the danger. It's a bit cliched, but it sounds like it's the danger of getting an outside manager into your county to manage your team, because he's there to do a job. He's looking for a certain level of commitment, expectation and whatnot, and he expects a certain standard from players. Obviously the players haven't met the standards that he would expect, and he's not going to be too shy about making that point.
Yeah.
Whereas if you have a manager from your own county who's, it's hurting him as yeah. much as it's hurting the players, and there's a tendency in that scenario to try and pull ranks and really come in together and try and figure it out together, as opposed to somebody saying, well, I'm doing my job, I'm giving you every tool here, yeah. lads, and you're not buying in. It's not, don't be looking at me, it's not my fault.
I often think outside managers go to outside managers for their own reputation. Like, they don't care about the county, they're doing that to further their own reputation. So like, when their reputation is not being furthered, they're like, whoa.
Well,
that's a great point, that a lad from his own county would go, we're all hurting here, I love those players, I've watched those lads come up through the underage yeah. ranks, and you care for them, you know. That you're right on that one.
Yeah, well, it's a noticeable trend that you would see, where a manager who's maybe brought into a county, when it's coming near the end, they have a tendency to maybe not deflect is the wrong word. Like, Pete McGrath could be 100% correct in what he's saying. The point I would make is that it's very, very difficult. You would rarely see a manager in their own county saying that about the players in the county, because they know that even after their time there, another manager will have to come in, probably with a lot of the same guys. So what is the point in, you know, doing sort of irreparable damage or turning players off entirely from committing to the county? Whereas if you're really serious about it and you want your county to do well, you can look at it and say, well, it's not worked out in my time here, I've done my best, there's still good lads there, they're still trying hard, it just hasn't worked out for whatever reason, and you know, the next guy that comes in, you would still want them to do well. You know, you're not kind of sitting there going, well, if I couldn't do well with them, I hope whoever comes after me does worse so I look better. You know, it's sort yeah. of bizarre sort yeah. of mentality to have.
It is a weird mentality. Right, quickly, Donegal, I know you watch this game, but we don't actually have time. I was going to get Brendan Devaney on the show, but the highlights on the Sunday game last night kind of turned me off this game. It looked like a challenge game. Cavan didn't turn up. Cavan are such an enigma with me. Whenever I don't watch them, they seem to get a good result. Whenever I watch them, they're useless. So, like, I mean, I don't rate this Cavan team at all, but then they're a Division 1 team, so they're a real confusing team for me, in that I can't catch them on a good day to go, That's what they're all about.
I have to say, in the first half, the halftime scoreline was just, you know, just desperately cruel on Cavan, because they had been very, very good in the first half, created plenty of opportunities. Donegal got a horrendously fluky goal where Michael Murphy dropped the 45 short, and Ryan McHugh, of all people,
yeah.
flicked it to the net.
Yeah, I saw that.
A terrible, terrible goal for Cavan to concede, and Cavan were in complete control. Cavan should have been
really
well clear at that stage.
Okay.
You know, 4 or 5 points clear, they scored a brilliant goal.
The goal was brilliant.
Killian Clark in the middle of the field was driving forward. He was causing Donegal all sorts of problems. They were lively up front. They were doing loads and loads of good things. Now, Donegal, in fairness to them, were playing some decent stuff, but Paddy McBrearty was completely nullified in the game, had no impact. He kicked 4 points in the game near the end when the game was over, but he was a non-event. It was really Michael Murphy that was probably influential for Donegal. Ryan McHugh, again,
in the forward line,
no impact on the game whatsoever.
Really?
The players that
Did
you would
he play up front? No, he played wing
he,
back.
He played. He spent a lot of his time, I think, playing in the half order. But Donegal, the positions are so fluid that they're sort of up and down. It's you know, he was marshalled. He was sort of tagged by Cavan, much like McBrearty was. And they, you know, they focused on them, so obviously it's going to be hard for them to get into the game. Now, that freed up Michael Langan, who kicked 3 points from play in his debut, and Kieran Thompson kicked a couple of nice scores as well. But overall, on the balance of play, Cavan were desperately unlucky to be so far behind at half time. Michael Murphy had a brilliant 10 minutes or 5 or 10 minutes after half time where he was involved in 3 or 4 scores for Donegal, and that made the lead unassailable. From that point on, Cavan had several opportunities. They kicked 4 or 5 wides in a row that they should have gotten and would have brought them right back into contention. So it was a funny old game, because Cavan shouldn't have been as far behind as they were. When Donegal were so far ahead, they almost seemed to take the you know, they seemed to relax a little bit, which allowed Cavan to come back into the game. Cavan kept missing their chances, so it ended up being this sort of nondescript comfortable victory for Donegal as they tagged on a few scores again near the end.
Right.
You know, but it was a game that if Cavan had taken their opportunities could have been so different for them.
Maybe they're lacking that bit of quality, which are
well. Look, that's what happens.
Front.
Yeah, look, that's what happens. If you're good enough, you take your opportunities, and you don't concede those cheap scores. So maybe if you look at every single game throughout, you know, teams probably have similar level of possession. It's what they do with it. So comfortable victory from Donegal, and a difficult one for Cavan because it was a sort of a demoralising defeat. Even though they did so, because when you do so many good things and you still get hammered, it's very hard to reevaluate where you are. Again, from Cavan's perspective, they need it. They certainly don't want to be playing Mayo. Or maybe they do. Maybe that's what they need. Maybe that's the challenge they need next day out to get them refocused for it.
Yeah, no, it's hard to know. We'll definitely do a bit more on Donegal the next day. We'll get someone from Donegal on. I didn't know your man Langan. Has he played the league?
He didn't. It was his debut. I think he's only 19, but right. he's a big guy. Very, very good.
How would he not have played the league? That's surprising, because they did try a lot of new lads. Isn't it gas, just before we finish up, Donegal, the narrative around Donegal is that they're a lovely now kicking team, that they play two inside and they get it into them and they take on their man and they'll drop a few back, but they'll try and leave someone in the half forward line. And on the evidence of yesterday, that's exactly what Galway tried to do when they're the big bad wolf, isn't it? Because it's where Galway traditionally have come from and where Donegal traditionally have come from. They're at the same place now, but one is outrageously bad and the other is decent. This fantastic for Donegal. Anyways, listen, performance of the weekend has to go to Wicklow after beating Offaly. They didn't win a game in the league in Division 4 and they came back and beat Offaly yesterday, who are a division team in Portlaoise. And their manager, John Evans, joins us on the line now. John, how's the head this morning?
Excellent, quite crystal clear actually. You know, we were well focused for the game, Cullum, and we knew it was within our ability. And I suppose the big thing we'd been working on is that we had a number of challenge games after the league, and we knew we had been improving and putting things together, and that's only natural too, because look, we're trying to learn a new game and play a new style of football, and with a new group of lads together. Helped big time by a couple of senior players. We're trying to gel them together, and the league was sort of coming a bit quick for us, but we did take a good bit of satisfaction out of a few things we did in the league. Now it wasn't all doom and gloom by us by any standard of means, but since the weather has cleared up some small bit, Cullum, we began to put it together, and we knew we were in with a serious shot, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah, and were you disrupted a lot by the weather? Because you did, on paper, you had a disastrous league, I suppose. You know, and maybe you won't be able to work on...
I didn't think it was a disaster. As I say, look...
Yeah, no, on paper, yeah.
On paper, I suppose, you look at those things. But there was a few things happened to us during the league, and we were trying to learn from it. But the weather was a huge disruption. I mean, most counties got one belt of snow, but Wicklow got three belts of it for 3 weeks, and it just was relentless, and it disrupted our training big time. We had to go indoors, and you know yourself, trying to train indoors isn't the answer. But at the same time, I suppose it put a bit of bonding into us. It put a bit of togetherness in us that we were all still clued in, irrespective of how bad the weather was.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, was it difficult to lift the confidence of the players? Because, I know you said you take some positives from the league, but you're still bottom of Division 4. So, I saw you quoted yesterday saying the first half was very tentative. It was almost like, you can talk about confidence, but they actually had to grow into the game and build that confidence up in the game itself.
Yeah, I think you need to hit the nail on the head there, because that's exactly the way the game went. We went down there full of gusto and with a good game plan and in mind and to execute that. And basically, we were very, very nervous. We just the occasion, I suppose, was sort of performing on the day in championship was that made us that bit tense, that bit tentative. But as the game went on, we threw off the shackles and we started playing football and we grew into the game.
Yeah, so you have a lot of young players after coming through. You still have Kieran Hyland, you have Stafford and you have Furlong. Like, I mean, they're still your big players. I can't believe Kieran Hyland's still playing, if that's C. Hyland. Like, I mean, I had a tough time marking him. It must have been 10 years ago.
Yeah, he's staying, Kieran Hyland. He's a wonderful guy, and staff. And look, you have to take your hat off to these boys for keep at it, like, you know, because they are the strong men of the team. They are the mentally, they're mentally strong, and one thing that's they're brilliant for Cullum is that they give good guidance and good give good example and good give a good attitude towards the younger players. You know, that's that. They're there as a great support, and you know, they owe Wicklow football nothing, but for Stafford and Ireland, and indeed the Rory Finn and John McGrath and these guys, yeah. You know, and Shawnee Furlong, you know, they've been carrying the Queen with no results, with no reward, and yet here they are back 5 years later and they're winning a championship. You know, just That's brilliant stuff.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
So what kind of style of player are you playing with them then, obviously? Because, like, I mean, you wouldn't be used to that to Division 4. And, like, we see Carlo trying to get out of it by playing a defensive style. And, you know, it's not easy to get up out of that Division 4.
Look, whether it's the style or not, every county goes at it differently. But, look, I'm playing the same thing as I did with Tipperary, as I did with Kerry, with Lone Rangers, with Roscommon. You know, that's what I'm trying to implement, and there's variations of that. But look, the big thing I've been trying to do is try and get the score up, get the Wicklow scoring more, because obviously, and the same thing happened in Roscommon. Roscommon were only scoring 10 points, and we got it up to 18-19. The same in Tipperary. So it's all about creating, putting in the foundation bricks, so that you can give yourself a chance of scoring, and it will come. And look, for me, winning the game was brilliant and was the foremost, but second most was that the scoring 120 yesterday. I mean,
yeah.
Anybody in their wildest dreams think that Wicklow would get over more than 14 points in a game? They'd be in dreamland.
So, just because you mentioned Tipperary there, and you mentioned Roscommon, and, like, I mean, Roscommon had huge amount of underage talent. What would have attracted you to Wicklow? Because it's not like, you know, Johnny McGee had a tough time. I think they only won 1 out of 9 games in his last year. You know, and he kind of oversaw a transitional phase from the Mick O'Time, and a lot of the older lads were leaving. Like, what would have attracted you down there?
The challenge, very simple, Colm. Challenge. The challenge was so big, so great. So and they needed it. And you know, the group of people that were put together, they impressed me so much that you know, that Wicklow was crying out for a structure to be put in place. Somebody that would encourage the young lads to come back in, and indeed some of the older fellas like staff again to come back in and start playing. And you know, that's what really attracted me to it. And as well as that, of course, there's mountains in Wicklow, and we've plenty of mountains here in Kerry, so you know, there's another side to it as well as this.
Yeah, you're speaking the language there. You are.
Yeah, exactly. As I said to somebody yesterday, you know, we know how to handle mountainy men, like, you know, down here in Kerry, because we have plenty of mountains down here ourselves.
Yeah, no, that's it. I never really thought about that. You're a perfect fit, so. Come here, talk to us.
Yeah, yeah.
Come on.
People were telling us that there was a divide between the West and the East. Every single club was represented there yesterday, and it was great to see the chairman and the secretaries of all the clubs combined, and all this disunity and talk that people were... They were all at the game yesterday. They were all out in the field column yesterday. And
right.
Look, that's what football is about.
That's great. That's great. And come here, John. Have you an input into the underage structures there as well? Are you helping them out kind of all round?
Yeah, well, that's the whole idea, is to do the same thing as we did in Tipperary.
In Tip, yeah.
Kevin O'Brien is after stepping in there now, in with the under-16s and 17s. And what a guy to lead. What a leader to put in there. And he's making strides with the under-17 team, and even though they were beaten by Offaly in the first round of their championship, they certainly put in a wonderful performance, and you know, they were applauded off the field. That type of stuff, getting the right people in the right place doing the right thing, Columbus. But that's where the development comes.
I think it is. I think that's very important. Come here, you've got the huge task of Dublin now, and I saw you quoted as saying you'd want the game in Aughrim, and personally I can't see why it's not in Aughrim. I see that a lot of Dublin season ticket holders are being accommodated by bringing it to Moor Park. They were accommodated when they had Laois by bringing them to Nolan Park, and I can't understand why an away team supporters should be accommodated. If you've got the home venue, that it should be packed full of your supporters, not theirs.
Look, Colm, the last three or four presidents that have come into this GAA have been talking about grassroots.
Yeah.
Here's a simple grassroots decision. And what do? They're going for bums and seats instead of looking after the footballers of Wicklow. Look, they should be and why I say that is that they had already written down, the Leinster Council had it written down in black and white that they would, that the Dublin team clubs would go to Tullamore, to O'Connor Park. Yet, when it comes to the you've said it yourself, the lowest team in Ireland playing the strongest team in Ireland, we go to a neutral venue. There's 10,000 vacancies in Aughrim, a fine field there. For God's sake, it would be for Wicklow football to have the privilege of having the Dubs down there would be just awesome.
Yeah,
but it's sad, really. I think it's, you know, we could use all the different words, but I think it's sad.
It is, and is that technically supposed to be a neutral venue, or you have a home? You're supposed to have the home venue.
Well, look, I don't know. I can't
answer
that
for
you. But look, it's a quarter final. If the Dubs are willing to go to Tullamore, why couldn't they come to Aughrim?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, that's
because,
it.
Because look, as I said already, the Dubs can beat us if they want to by 10, 20 or 30 points. Look, that's irrelevant. And it's going to be an occasion more than a game, really. Like, you know, so... I can't see the wisdom in naming Tullamore if it was Offaly, and then moving poor old Wicklow down to Moor Park. Doesn't add up in my book anyway.
Yeah, so. No, it doesn't. It's unfortunate, and it seems to be the same kind of complaints every year. But listen, come here, John. Thanks for taking a call, and best of luck with Wicklow football, not just against Dublin, but for the next few years when you're trying to improve
the way we're looking at it, Colm, is that it's a development. This is... Dublin is just one game. It's the year, the progression, the attitude, the building for next year and the year after and the year after, and who we leave it to after us. That's what brings it on, and that's what has happened before, and I hope it will happen here now.
Brilliant stuff, John. Thanks a lot. That's always time for this week. We'll be back as usual next Thursday with a preview show. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we put them back in their f***ing houses for f***ing 10 years.